That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Sierra Unfiltered, which I guess we should talk about. That's only going to be the name for 4 more episodes.
Oh my gosh, you're right.
Is that so?
Yes.
Oh.
That is so. We are officially going to be rebranding the podcast. We're doing like a big photo shoot. We just planned all the outfits. And we're pretty much redoing everything.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm so excited.
I can't wait to see it all together.
It's been so much fun putting it all together. And how's it been for you guys? Because this is kind of your first, like, big influencer-y project.
It's every step of the way. It's just, like, from deciding what makeup you're going to do, talking to the makeup artist, talking to the photographer, just thinking about his ideas, and then collabing us together.
Yeah.
Just,
and I think, like, doing something like a project like this big of this magnitude, like, for me and, like, for us has been, like, okay, like, this is really happening. Like, we're going to have a podcast. Like, that's going to be, like, our thing.
Yeah.
And people are going to listen and see us. And, like, I think that's been the thing I've been thinking about a lot. Like, okay, yeah. Like, we're going to do this thing. Like, there's going to be people, like, doing, like, the thing in my DMs. And, like, you know what I mean? Like, that all happens. And I feel like it is gonna happen kind of quickly just because we're not starting from scratch. Like, this isn't
right,
you know.
Well, and even for me, like, you know, I've been doing this for a while. I do a lot of big projects. This is probably the biggest project I've ever done in, like, the photo shoot, the set, we're doing a whole new podcast set in here, you guys. It's gonna be so cool.
You're not even gonna recognize it.
Yeah.
Like,
this looks like a couple of people just set up some microphones and sat down, which they did. But the new one, it's still going to be in this room, but we're trying to make it look like a studio.
Yes. It's going to feel like we're on like a TV set, like a movie set.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's the vibe you want to get, you know, like you show up to set and you're like, let's chat. You
yes.
know?
Like, yes. Ooh.
And that's like, that's why I'm so glad we're still doing it here, because we get the benefit of like, oh, we have a set. It's in this room. We walk in, we film. But also, we're not, like, driving to a place. It's, like, at my house, we grabbed LaCroix from the fridge before.
Right.
Like, it's very comfy.
Right.
Which is nice. So, yeah, we're really excited about that. That should be end of May, I think. So be looking out for that.
Yes.
And then today, we are going to talk all things being an influencer, being a content creator. I know Ryan and P have a ton of questions that I'm going to kind of answer for them and for you guys. And then we also pulled questions from the comments.
Yes. I think this is going to be a cool way to, like, have this conversation, because I feel like other YouTubers and influencers will do, like an Instagram Live or film, like, a video, you know, and, like, talk about stuff. But this will be more, like, actual conversational, like, in-the-moment questions,
yes.
Which will be cool.
And I haven't looked at the questions at all, but these are the kind of conversations that the three of us have off camera.
Right.
All the time. And I've been wanting to do a video about, you know, kind of the ins and outs of being a content creator, but it kind of needs to be long form to, like, actually answer things that people aren't surface level, that people don't usually get answers to.
And that people can't just, like, look up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like, obviously there's stuff that you can Google and find stuff out, but, like, to know, like, the details and the ins and out of it, like, is really personal. And it's different for everybody also.
Yes.
So I think it'd be
cool. Yeah, because her journey is different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I gotta get my pen and paper ready because I have some questions.
Totally.
But yeah, thank you guys so much for everyone who left comments with questions for this podcast on the last episode. Mm-hmm. It was so fun to read through, and I'm just really excited.
Yeah, and honestly, seeing those questions, I was like, oh my goodness, I didn't even think about asking that. Let me write that down
right.
and ask Sierra the question.
And the thing is, for me, I feel like it's kind of, you know, the, like, having a frog in boiling water, they don't realize it's boiling. Yes. I don't realize a lot of the things about my job that are weird because I'm the frog in the boiling water, and I'm just like, this isn't hot. This is normal.
Right.
This is
right.
a jacuzzi.
Yeah, it's a jacuzzi.
It's that meme. It's that meme with the dog sitting in the house on fire. This is fine.
Yeah. And that's the thing. And a lot of the times, I don't even think about how things are weird until you guys go, wait, what?
Right.
That's how it happened?
Like, and it happens so often, I think. We're like, right. what? We're like, really?
That's like every day?
Yeah. Like, yesterday, Paloma was asking me about, like, collabs and, like, oh, like, how do you meet people for collabs? And I was saying that, like, I like to just collab with people who I've, like, already met in person. But a lot of the times management will, like, basically set creators up on, like, blind date collabs of, like...
Could you imagine?
And they were like, wait, that's real? I was like, oh, yeah, that is weird, huh?
like, that's weird.
Your manager calls you, like, okay, at 2 o'clock, you're going to the Panera, and you're going to meet this other YouTuber. And I'm like, okay, hello, hi, nice to meet you. No, like,
right,
it's just
right.
so...
Especially if you've only seen them through the screen or if you don't even know them.
Yeah, and I did a lot of, not collabs like that, but just, like, meeting creators, going out to lunch early on in my YouTube career, which, and I did make a lot of friends that way. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of the times then when you go right into just, we're filming a video together the first time we meet, you can tell on camera that, like...
Right.
They're not really friends.
Right.
The chemistry is off, right?
Yeah. And that's why I, like, it's great now that I just get to, like, film with people that I, like, when I film with Carrie, like, we're, you know, super close.
Right,
so
right.
It feels really natural. But anyways, we can get into all of that. Should we just start with
Yeah, I think we should just go in.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you want to go first?
And I sound so silly. Like, I feel so silly asking it, but how do you even go or begin to get sponsorship or, like, brand deals?
Okay,
like,
yeah.
Where?
That's a good one, yeah.
So, early on in my YouTube days, you know, there weren't brands reaching out to me when I had 10,000, 20,000, 30,000 subscribers. And so there are these websites where you can submit yourself for a campaign.
Oh, okay.
I think the one I used early on was called Revfluence, but I don't know if they even exist anymore. There was a couple. There was also one called Clever that I used a lot. And these would be, like, small budget campaigns, but a lot of the time for big brands. So, like, a big, pretty well-known brand would post a listing saying, you know, we're looking for 10 creators to post a sponsored YouTube video for $300. Mm-hmm. And so I would apply and, you know, you'd answer all these questions and then they'd pick, you know, from the people who'd applied. That was really great for me early on because otherwise I wasn't able to get brand deals. And at that point I was only making like maybe $50 a month from AdSense. Mm-hmm. So then being able to get like a contract for like $300 was like huge. That was game changing. And so I would spend, early on, I spent probably 3 or 4 hours a week just applying to campaigns on there. Mm-hmm. And I got to do some really cool brand deals early on that I don't think I ever would have gotten to do without that. Like, I remember when I had, like, 10,000 subscribers, I got to work with Naked Juice from that.
Oh,
which
wow.
that, to me, that gave me this kind of, like, I guess, validation, you know? Mm-hmm. And also then when I was putting together my media kit, I was able to say brands I've worked with.
I was literally about to ask, does that give you like more credibility? Like I've worked with these other brands.
I think
brands.
It gave me a
so
little.
So you should work with me too.
Yes. I think it helped me early on with credibility. And also I had no idea how to just cold reach out to brands like that.
Right.
So these websites really helped me in being able to do that.
Mm.
And then I later, you know, as my channel grew and I started working with a team, I realized that those websites are really, really, really undervaluing creators.
Mm.
And so, you know, now I have the privilege and the ability to not need to do that. And I, you know, get brand inquiries just through my management, through my email. But, you know, early on, even though, they probably should have been paying me more, it was worth it.
Right
now you talking about that, it got me thinking. Right now on TikTok I see a lot of, they obviously know I'm trying to TikTok, and so they're like, hey, if you want to be a content creator, and they're trying to get out of this space where we don't know, it's like we don't know how much they're paying, and so they're like, hey, you need to know how much you need to ask for brands, and saying like, oh, I've asked this brand for this much money. They're kind of just like, it's like a glass door for like how much you should ask, because they're saying like they have budgets. You need to ask how much their budgets are before you just say, oh, this is how much I'll do it for. And just like tips like that.
Right.
Because if not, they want to. Because
you could get more money if you just negotiate.
Yes. And they want to do that obviously to creators where they're like, oh, well, we sent you product. Do something. And obviously, if you're new, you're like, oh my gosh, that's great.
Like,
they're sending
me free product.
So let me do that. But they're saying no, like you could really just like ask for more.
Early on when I was applying through those websites, a high school friend, her sister worked for one of those. And so she, that's actually how I found out about it. But the first one I ever did, she reached out to me. She was like, hey, I'm working on this campaign for like this. It's like a sweetener for like beverage sweetener. Someone dropped out last minute. We need someone to make a video like tomorrow. Like, would you be willing to? And I was like, oh my gosh, yes, that'd be amazing. She said, great. What's your rate for like an integrated video, which usually means like 1 to 3 minute mention? And I said $50. And she messaged, I think I had 10,000 subscribers at the time. I was getting like 1,000 views a video. She messaged me back and she was like, hey, as your friend, like, because I was friends with her sister, I'm not going to tell them you said that because their budget is $500. But if it wasn't a family friend who was working, she would have said,
oh, yeah,
great, $50. And I remember thinking, like, feeling like I asked for too much. You know, like, oh, I... And also, that's another thing is, I guess, just radical honesty for this episode. I used to have a fake email for a fake manager because I knew that people wouldn't take me seriously and that they'd try to take advantage of me.
That's smart.
That is smart.
So I had a fake manager.
Good for you. Honestly, yeah, that's smart. But
and I made him a man, too, which I think probably got me smarter.
But honestly, but think about that. Like, that's, like, shitty.
Yeah.
That you were like, I'm doing the thing. Why just show me some respect and, like... Yes. Take me seriously. Like, you shouldn't have had to, like, create this fake, like, man manager.
Yes. It gives you, like you said earlier, credibility. Mm-hmm. It just, yeah, you seem legit. If you have a man manager.
Yeah. Yes.
You must be doing something right.
Uh-huh. And so I made that fake manager account. And then I actually got a manager, I think around 100,000 subscribers, I think. And so then they would negotiate my deals and manage my inbox, and my rates like tripled for a sponsorship when I got a manager, just because they knew what to ask, how to ask, who to ask.
Right.
And also a big thing that I was told by actually someone I met at like a YouTube creator event was like, if you're getting more brand inquiries than you can take on your channel, your rate is too low. So like raise the rate. And go with the higher value ones and do less.
Yeah.
And so then before I had a manager, that's how I would decide my rate because I didn't really have any creator friends to like talk about it with either. So if I was just, if every brand I was reaching out to said yes, then I'm like, okay, it's time to up my rate.
Right.
Because I'm making it too easy for them.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
And that's just knowing your value.
Yeah.
That's what they're saying on TikTok. They're like, ladies, know your value. The videos are like, you know, just giving helpful tips. And I'm so glad that there are people out there trying to coach like us starting out, like not knowing. Because luckily we don't have
not everybody Sierra has
right here to ask the questions.
And that's the thing is that you don't know until you ask.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Even me now, like I all the time feel weird about asking for stuff. And then like 90% of the time they say yes.
Right. You know? Like, you just have to ask.
Yeah. Like we're, you know, if I'm traveling somewhere for like a shoot, in my brain, I'm like, oh, well, I'll just pay for it myself. And then I'm like, well, I guess I should ask, but I feel bad because they're already paying me to go. So do they really need to pay for my travel?
Right.
And then they say yes. And I'm like, well, saved me like $1,000. So I'm glad I asked. But especially with, I think when you're a micro influencer working with small brands, the budgets are going to be smaller and it's mutual, right? They don't have a big budget. You have a smaller following, but you can work together to learn how to do sponsorships, to bring some credibility, to find out what it's like to work with a brand. But when you're working with a big brand, they have the budget.
Right.
Right.
You just got to, but they don't want to give it to you. You just got to pull it out of them.
Right. Yeah. All of a sudden, Amazon comes up. I'm like, $1 million.
Yeah. Exactly.
Jeff Bezos, I know you got the bag.
Jeff Bezos himself is delivering your $1 million check.
Yes, in a big check.
It's the drone.
It's like,
he shows up like on a drone or something.
No, totally. You know, totally.
And anyways.
But that actually is a good segue to a question I was going to ask is like, at what point, whether that was following or sponsorships or whatever, were you able to be like, okay, this is my full-time job?
Mm. I definitely took a risk. And that's, I think, also where privilege comes in that I felt like I was able to take that risk because I knew if it didn't work out, I could move back in with my parents. I knew if I, you know, couldn't pay my bills that I could probably, you know, lean on my parents for that.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, I didn't have to, but I knew that I could.
Right.
And that's where I think that, like, piece of privilege of, like, yes, I worked hard and, like, but yes, I had a safety plan and that gave me the ability to take that risk.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I had around 100,000 subscribers. Oh yes, that's right. So I had a video, it was like a slow burn from 0 to 20,000.
Mm-hmm.
And then around 30,000-ish subscribers, I had a video go viral and I went to 100,000 in less than a week.
Wow.
And that was nuts.
And it's crazy.
Yeah. So I had this video go viral. I immediately tried to make a video that was similar so that it would get recommended against it.
Right.
So then when people were watching the viral one, then YouTube says, here's a similar video.
Right. Smart.
And I basically did that like 5 videos in a row. So that they kept just getting recommended off and off and off of each other.
Right.
And so I got to 100,000 in less than a week. I remember, because I was teaching voice lessons at the time, I had my live subscriber count open on my laptop next to, like, the tab of me, like, writing notes for my students. And I just, like, I'd refresh it every, like, 10 minutes, and it'd go up by, like, 5,000 subscribers.
Oh, my God. The thrill of that.
I know. The thrill, it really was. I just couldn't believe it. And so... it was shortly after that I, because I was doing voice lessons at the time, and then I also was a birthday party princess.
Yep.
And then I also was doing the social media management for the party company. So it was at that point that I quit princessing and social media managing for that company, and I kept doing voice lessons because that was also like a safety net that I knew if views went down or I wasn't getting sponsors, that I still had that guaranteed income.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And Steven and I were living together at the time, and so I knew, okay, like, hopefully I'll make good money consistently, but if not, like, he was open to, you know, chipping in a little bit more for rent if needed.
Right.
So that was another, like, privilege and safety net that I had. But, so a couple weeks after that viral video, I was like, I'm quitting my princessing job. I'm quitting, you know, social media so that I can't, well, not social, their social media.
Right.
Definitely not going on social media.
Right.
But so that I could spend time making those videos to get recommended off of each other.
Mm-hmm.
But I kept doing voice, which was, I actually did voice up until, I want to say, yeah, I was right around my wedding. So up until 2017.
Wow.
So I did that for a long time.
Yeah, I was like, you were like already.
Yeah, I was
like pretty big at that point.
I think I had around 300,000, maybe 200,000.
I mean, I remember the wedding video.
Yes,
and it was iconic. I remember.
It was actually. Wow. I had been thinking I wanted to quit for a little while, and that I wanted to go full time with YouTube. But also, teaching voice was such great money for only 3 days a week in the afternoon. So I was like, you know,
it's fine.
I enjoy it, but I wanted to take time off for my wedding that I didn't have, and I was kind of feeling ready anyways. And I remember I got one big brand deal, like the biggest I had ever been paid, that gave me like the courage and the stability to be like, you know what? This brand deal could pay my rent, so I at least am good for a month.
That's awesome. Right.
So I quit that too. But it especially early on, and honestly even still now, the majority of my social media income is brand deals. Mm-hmm. And so back then, it would have been a lot longer for me to go full time if it was just from AdSense.
Right.
And so that's why now, like, I could, if I did no brand deals, no sponsorships, I could do this full time just for me. Mm-hmm. But I would be making a lot less content, a lot lower quality, and I wouldn't have a team. Mm-hmm. And so having those sponsors, and especially regular sponsors like ambassadorships or like monthly deals where I have this guaranteed income for 6 months or for a year, allows me to not only have financial security for myself, but also for my team. Mm-hmm. That I now know, because I have, you know, a commitment with a brand who I work with on the vlog once a month for the next year, I know I have guaranteed income for not just me, but for everyone on my team for the next year.
Right.
Which is really, really great and nice. And that's why I think sponsors are so important. And also, like, I think early on, people used to get really mad about sponsors. Like, the people thought it meant you're selling out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think the audiences are a little more open to it now.
Yeah.
Because they know. They're like, oh, this helps the creator to, you know, be able to, you know, have a team or to be able to go full time on YouTube or get new equipment. Sorry, I feel like I am talking a mile a minute.
This is so good.
And you're so right about that, where I see, and I actually see people or influencers get celebrated once they do get their ads. They're like, yes, girl, get your money.
Yeah,
like, you see that now and more than like, oh, she's selling out. Because you're like, girl, first sponsor. And just like, I remember like Teffy, like now she's like a big thing. But for a moment, she was like, oh my God, I'm doing my first brand deal. And we were like, yes, get the coin. Yeah. Like,
and especially when influencers get to partner with a brand that they have talked about organically.
Yes. Right.
Like, I got to do an Instagram sponsorship with Disney last year. The comment section was just like, oh my God, it happened. Like, I'm so excited for you. And not only was that so great for the audience and for me, because I knew, like, oh my God, like, they are so happy, they're excited. Mm-hmm. But how great for the brand.
Right.
That's so good for them.
And they're like, wow, this was actually a good, like, yeah. this was a good thing to do. A good person to work with.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. And so that's, I would say, one of the biggest ways to support a creator is commenting and saying, like, yes, I love this partnership, or I love this video, or I love the way you did this, especially when working with brands, because they see that and they look for that.
Yeah.
And gotcha. They ask for screenshots. And
I will make sure to tell all my friends.
Noted. Yes.
Tell them yeah. how much you love me in this tide.
Yeah. And also, if the brand posts content with that influencer, nothing is better than the comments being flooded with people just being like, oh my God, I'm so glad you worked with this creator. I yeah. love them.
That. Love
because
that.
The brand is just like, oh, wow. Right. Okay, we should work with them again. Again. Yeah. And then you have a little room to be like, okay, so it worked out really well last time. Show so maybe we should,
exactly.
pay a little yeah. bit.
Show yes. me the money.
Yeah.
That's so fun.
Yeah.
Wow, imagine, how was that experience? I don't know. Do we have a time? I know we have to go to a lot of stuff, but I'm like.
We got time.
Okay. How was it working with Disney? Like that, like it's a big brand. So such like what are the dream. Requirements and just like, you yeah. know, like.
I, early on in my, actually when I got my first manager, she asked me to write a list of dream brands that I would want to work with. And I wrote down Disney, Aerie, and I think, yeah, Nintendo. Disney, Aerie, and Nintendo.
You've literally.
And I have now worked with all three of them, which is so cool.
Oh, yes, yes.
But I would still love to work with Disney Parks because.
Right.
Yeah, right.
No.
Parks. Disney
right.
Parks. But yeah, working with Disney was so cool. So, like, such a cool experience. We got to, it was Christmas themed. So we got to, like, order all of these Disney Christmas decorations.
Girl.
And then we were all dressed in Disney, which is just so cool.
That's
the truth.
That's so fun.
Oh, my God.
Not
Christmas Disney merch.
You're like Mickey Mouse, you're like, yeah. And it's Christmas. It's
yes.
Like,
I was oh like, gosh. I would post this without you paying.
Right.
But also thanks for paying me.
No, right.
Oh my
but
gosh.
One of the interesting, actually not with Disney in particular, but a lot of the times with big brands that I've worked with, they have really stringent legal requirements, mm-hmm. which my main goal when I'm doing sponsors is it to feel completely organic. Right. My content doesn't change. I'm just integrating the brand into my content.
Yeah.
But sometimes brands, basically, probably their legal department, I think, wants to treat working with influencers with the same stipulations as they do for TV. So,
like a commercial,
yes. Mm. And so, what's really hard is a lot of the times they want no logos, no brands, which, you know, sometimes it's easy for a shirt, right? You just say, okay, I'm just going to wear a plain shirt.
Right.
But sometimes they get so, picky about it that it's like, you have to blur the logo on your stove. You have to, like, the artwork on right. your walls. You need to get a release from the artist to show that in the video.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, and so.
Cover the label on the fridge.
Exactly. Right. Well, actually, yes. And oh so I would say 95% of the time when brands have really strict legal requirements like that, even if I love the product, I say no. And even if the pay is great, I say no. Because the audiences are smart. They
right,
know.
Like, why is your fridge blurred?
Yeah. And,
what are we doing?
And like, and if I can't say a brand weird. Name, if instead of saying, oh, I'm about to hop on the Peloton bike, all of a sudden I say, I'm about to hop on my stationary bike, unbranded. They're right. like, why are you talking like that?
Yeah.
Right. But there have been a couple that I said yes to just because I love the brand so much.
Right.
And the pay was great. And they were like, you know, hey, we'll work with you on trying to make this feel organic still.
Right.
But if in a branded video you ever see random things blurred or taped up, that is why.
Yeah.
Oh, and then a lot of the times they require location releases.
Oh,
so,
my goodness.
Wait, what is that?
So, like, if I were to go to Target and vlog, right, uh-huh. I am not going in like a TV crew where I get a location release and I talk to their corporate store.
Oh.
They want you to do that. So right. if I were to go to the beach with Grace, they would say you need a location release from the city.
Which you just simply can't.
Which is so whenever I have spot again, that's something where I usually say no, but I have said yes a few times because it was like dream brands.
Right.
And so then I'm like, okay, I have to figure out a creative idea that I don't have to leave my house for, that doesn't involve me saying any brand names or showing any artwork. And that still feels organic to the audience.
Right.
And so there was one, I don't think I can say who it was, but it was a big brand that I love. And so I was willing to do that. And so Jess and I and Kenzie spent about an hour the night before taping up every label in my house. Just so that I could vlog like normal. So like
right.
on the fridge, we got gaff tape and taped it up. Like all that kind of stuff.
Listen,
it's gotta be done. You gotta do. You know what I mean? Like,
and I'm still glad I said yes, even though it was all that work because it was such a dream.
Right.
But it's all those kind of things where like, and a lot of the times they don't want you to say that or you're not allowed to say that.
Right.
And so I can't tell people like, oh yeah, sorry, everything is blurred in this video and I'm talking a little weird. It's because
this is sponsored.
Sierra, blink twice if you're okay.
Yeah, right.
She's like, hey guys, welcome. So obviously there are some regulations that you have to follow, like brand wise, cover up the logos. Do you have to follow like a script specifically, or, you know, like what freedom do you have?
So it varies a lot from brand to brand. Okay. Early on when I was still figuring it out, sometimes brands would send contracts or send their talking points and it would literally be like, say this verbatim, like as if it's a commercial, like read this. And I figured out very early on that not only does that not feel natural for me, but if I read this script verbatim, LaCroix, tastes delicious, bubbly, and my favorite. And then they also do that same brand deal with 10 people. And then after they watch my video, they go to your video and you go, LaCroix, tastes bubbly and delicious.
Right.
Weird.
Right.
Because why is everyone referring to Best Fiends in exactly the same way?
Oh my God. It also like... Then it is really like, you don't believe that.
No,
like this
that's
is
not
you really just did this for the coins and like that's your business and whatever, but like it feels like you didn't even try to make it not weird.
And the thing is, the brands that get it, and the brands that don't.
Period.
Because the brands that have been in this game for a while and are being the most successful at influencer marketing understand that the best way to reach the consumer is organically. Mm-hmm. Right. Is for the just to say, hey, you like LaCroix? Tell us what you like about LaCroix, and then just make sure you say this coupon code at the end, or make sure you say our tagline at the end.
Right.
So usually now with the brands that I work with, they'll send a list of talking points, and it'll usually be like, pick three from this list and say them in your own words. And then usually at the end, there's like a line or a coupon code or what they call a CTA, a call to action. Yes, click the link in my description, and you can get 10% off with code... Sierra, Ryan, and Paloma.
Oh, yeah. Look, LaCroix. Listen. Come on.
Which, by the way, I want to know how that works. Like, the affiliate links. Like, you know, just like, so you give out your code. Now what happens?
Yeah, so when the brand is sponsored, at least in my experience, usually I'm not getting a kickback.
Okay.
So if they'll give me a code, but my rate is set for them. So they're paying me a set rate. And then they use that code to track how successful the partnership was to decide if they want to do it with me again in the future. So it doesn't, I'm not usually, there have been a couple times where I do get a kickback from the code, but typically if people use the code, that does indirectly help me because it's telling the brand that this was successful.
Right.
But I'm not getting a percentage of that sale.
And so that would be then the difference between like, affiliate links.
Yes. So then the affiliate links are essentially the opposite. So the affiliate links is the brand is not paying me directly. I have no relationship with this brand. I use a website called Magic Links for it. And so I basically just copy paste the link of the product, put it on Magic Links. They make a bit.ly out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I get a commission on anyone who purchases through the link, usually between like 1% and 5%. So if I do an affiliate link, I am not getting paid anything up front, nor do I have like a contract with the brand.
Right.
But I get a percentage from sales.
Right. Gotcha. Because it's like you're being like, oh yeah, like tell them I sent you. It's kind of like that.
Yes. Let them know I sent you. Mm-hmm. And you probably wouldn't have bought these pants if I didn't show them.
No, right.
So I'm getting the kickback from the brand.
Gotcha.
So actually, let's take a subscriber question real quick.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Zoe, thank you so much for your comment. She asked, how do you keep a work-life balance with your employees and set boundaries when there are some of your best friends?
Yeah, that's the thing is like, it's so fun working with friends. Like there's a reason that a lot of the people I've hired around me were friends first, and the people that I hired who weren't friends first are now also friends, you know? Mm-hmm. But it is hard where like, I feel like there's a lot of code switching, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
Like, especially with Kenzie and I, we'll send emails that are like relatively formal of like, hey, here's my invoice attached. What are the hours for the shoot next Thursday? Is, you know, da 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 da. And then she'll text me and be like, oh my God, ha ha ha, this like dumb meme thing, you know?
Right.
And so I do think there's a lot of like code switching in that way. Mm-hmm. And I try to be really conscious about like keeping a good separation between what is what is friend time and what is work time?
Yeah.
You know, and both can be fun. Sometimes we're having friend time and I'm also vlogging, and sometimes we're having work time and we're also like chatting and having fun.
Right.
But I think I try to set expectations up front of like, this is us, like we're just hanging out as friends and this is work.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like we try to do the same too.
I think so. Cause when, especially like if we show up, like we know we're going to film a podcast, we're like, hey everyone, like, hey, blah, blah, blah. This is what we're doing today. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about this. And then after when we're done talking about things we need to talk about, then we can.
It's friend time.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. 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 And I also try not to like text people late at night just because I'm working late at night. Right. So like a lot of the times, you know, if I'm up on my computer at like midnight working on something and I think of it, I'm like, oh, I want to tell Jess this. I'm like, text her tomorrow. Jess does not work for you at midnight.
Right.
And so I try to keep work stuff within work hours.
Right.
Is what I try to
do. Yeah. That was a good question.
Yeah, it was.
I actually have a question.
Ooh.
How does it feel working with your spouse? Because you on the IRL channel, on the vlog channel.
And behind the scenes, I feel like a lot of people don't know, but Steven does a whole lot of behind the scenes work. Mm-hmm. He is like the he's essentially like the CFO of.
Right.
Yeah.
IT Steve.
We call him IT Steve because he's always helping us with like computers and camera and all this stuff. But it's fun. I really enjoy it. I feel like, honestly, early on, it was not good for us to work together. Before I had an editor, a videographer, a producer, any of that, I would just get Steven to help me film. And I would watch all of the like aesthetic lifestyle girlies on YouTube with their, you know, like stabilized slow motion camera shots and perfect all of this. And I wanted my videos to look like that. Mm-hmm. And I had the vision for it. And then I would ask Steven to film for me. And of course it wouldn't look like that because he is not a videographer.
Right.
And I think I would get frustrated. And then he felt like I, you know, had these really high expectations that he could never meet. And so early on, I don't think it was good for us to be working like that together. Now I love it because Steven does not have to do everything.
Right.
You know, he has his 9-to-5 job and he helps me with stuff on the side and we vlog together, which is very low stress because we're just filming whatever we're doing.
Right.
And he works on the financial stuff, which, yes, is like working with me, but it's very independent work.
Right.
You know, like we're not doing the tax stuff together. Right. Like he's taking care of it and then running it by me.
Right.
And with the creative stuff, I'll get his input like, hey, what do you think of this edit or what do you think of this idea? But it's not his responsibility to like be super involved in that.
And you have other people that know how to get the angles and do all that stuff.
And it's their job to do it.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so, and I think that's good. And I think I've also learned to just like lower expectations a little bit when you're asking someone to just help. Like when I would ask Steven to help or ask my mom to help early on, I think it's not good for me to have these like super high expectations for what it should look like.
Yeah.
But also YouTube back then was so different in that everything had to be perfect, aesthetic.
Yes.
It was like my videos early on were just like 4-minute videos, all voiceover with like the aesthetic sweeping shots.
And the transition slides. Uh-huh. Like remember back then when they would do like the neon like triangles that would float around. Do you remember that? That was, and I
let
loved
me tell
it.
You about that because everyone had those same transitions. Yes. No. And I was like, these are not in Final Cut Pro. So how do I get the cool pink triangle zooming out or like the three-toned wipe slide?
Yep.
So I looked everywhere. I wanted those lifestyle girly transitions. No one talked about where they got them or anything. Finally, I met someone at a YouTube event who had those transitions, and I was like, where did you get those? And it was from like I wish I could remember the company, but it was from a company that sells like packs for that you buy online for like $30, and then it downloads to Final Cut Pro.
Oh, I see. Mm.
And so then I was able to get all the cool transitions.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was great. And so, but I back then, I do think YouTube was a lot less real.
Yes.
And so now I think if we were ever to go back to the time when it was just Steven and I doing everything, I think it would be a lot easier because there's not as much like need for perfection. I think now I honestly like things to be a little messy and a little real and honest and, you know, not perfectly aesthetic all the time.
Yeah.
And so I think my standards just wouldn't be as high, which is interesting because now my platform is so much bigger.
Right.
You would think that the standards would be higher, but instead, and I do think having that like platform and having, you know, a larger subscriber base gives me that comfort to be like, okay, I don't have to chase views anymore. Mm-hmm. You know,
right.
People are here. Even if I posted a video that didn't do super well, it would probably still at least have like, I don't know, 80,000 people watching it.
Right.
Which is huge.
That's a lot of people.
And so I think it's given me some comfort, at least in the last, I would say honestly, since the beginning of the pandemic, where I like post less and I don't stress as much about what I'm posting because I'm like, it's not like in those early days, like I was saying, of refreshing the subscriber count,
right,
chasing the views, being like, I have to get my videos recommended because what if this all goes away tomorrow? Right. Now I feel a little bit more like comfortable. Mm-hmm. And so I can relax a little bit and do silly videos and not stress about them performing really well.
Right.
And making content that like you really enjoy like to do. Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
And I think honestly, that was my biggest struggle when I at the beginning of the pandemic, we were like, oh, okay, we're going to try YouTube like we all did. And right. what we found was, what you have to do is what's trending to first get an audience. And it was hard for us to like feel motivated to like want to do it. Cause you're like, I don't really want to do that because that's not really what I want to do. But it feels like yes. You have to do that until like we get to,
you're big enough to just do what you want.
Yeah.
I actually gave a talk on that at an event. And the way I described it was as an hourglass of trying to reach viewerships. When you're at the beginning, you have to do really wide-reaching content that everyone wants to see because you're trying to bring in all of that viewership, right? So it's a wide base. You want content that appeals to a lot of people. You want everyone to be able to relate to it. Once you gain a little bit of traction and you have, you know, a couple thousand, maybe 10, 20,000, you want to niche down. You want to make that hourglass smaller in the middle to serve the niche audience that you have cultivated. Mm-hmm. And be like, I want to reach people who are looking for the content I make instead of just, I want to reach everyone.
Right.
And then once you have grown past that niche, you can open up the hourglass again because now people are invested in watching you and not necessarily the topic. And I
write
feel
that down. That was so good.
I feel
that's
like
such a great way to describe it.
I only reached the top of the hourglass at the beginning of the pandemic. It was actually after I hit 1 million subscribers because that was my huge goal that I was chasing. I'm like, I want that gold play button. Yeah. I want 1 million subscribers. Like, yeah. I want to do these really trendy topics and videos to get to that milestone. And then I reached it and I was like, cool. I'm
now
here.
What?
Yeah. And I realized I'm okay with not growing past this. I really am comfortable at the level of fame and the reach that I have now where I have an amazing audience. Oh my God. Like everyone tells me all the time, like, you are so lucky. Like, your audience is freaking cool AF.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I agree. Like, my audience is mostly people my age. It's like 98% female. Like, these are my peers.
Right.
These are people I would be friends with. When I meet viewers out and about, I'm like, let's go. Like, you and I we're the same.
right.
And so I realized if more people like that reach my content, that's cool. But also I'm happy with where I'm at.
Yeah.
And also I still live a very normal life. You know, I think like the top, if we're talking like top 1% of creators, they go to Disneyland, they get mobbed. They can't go to Target. They're in magazines. They're in gossip tabloids. Like, they are celebrities.
Right.
And I am not a celebrity. I'm still just an influencer. And I don't think I want to be a celebrity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's what I realized after I hit 1 million subscribers was I don't think I want 10 million. I don't think I want to get, like, just to keep trying to chase that growth.
Right.
And I'm okay if, you know, it's not that I don't want new people to find my content.
No,
sure.
Right.
That's great, but it's not the priority anymore. Mm-hmm. And so then I've been able to open up the top of that hourglass and be like, you know what? I think a lot of the people, some people are still specifically here for the fashion content. But also, I think, and I've seen it especially in the vlog, people are pretty down to just watch me do the stuff I like to do.
Yeah.
You know? Like, the amount of positive feedback I got on my, like, rock tumbling.
Right.
Like, or, like, my gardening. Right. Like, and how lucky to have this audience who's just like, hey, we just want to watch you be yourself.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I would so much rather have that than have 10 times the audience I have and not have that, like, personal connection.
And making content that you ultimately, like, don't love. Really
it kind of
be.
Feels
yeah.
like
you know
yeah the opposite yeah yeah yeah, yeah.
It kind of feels like when they tell you you want to have it's like the quality of friends like the, not the quantity mm. you know you're not mm. trying yes. to have as all the friends and popular or whatever yeah. but it's like you don't have so much substance but then when you have a small tighter group you're like and you know what we all and also love and support each other here and it's so great that your fans are like that.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah
yeah oh yeah and I'm so lucky and I don't want to sit here and be like don't chase the trends because I have, like, you kind of have to do that starting yeah. out.
No,
I
right.
am sitting here now, you know, 8 years later being able to say, I don't have to do the trends. Like, don't chase the trending videos. Just right, be
just
yourself.
Just do what you love.
And it's like, of course I get to say that because I, you know, right. but at the beginning, like, if I hadn't chased those trends and put all the hashtags I could and tried right. all of these trending things, I right. wouldn't have gotten to the point where now I can do pretty much like whatever the fuck I want.
Yeah. Yeah. No, right. Yeah. And that's like the goal. And I think that's what's really cool about TikTok.
Yes.
Is that you don't really have to do things that are trendy. Like, you should. And, like, if you're trying to grow, like, then cool. But, like, you could be doing something completely random, anything, and go viral.
I love TikTok for that. I think TikTok is the easiest platform to grow on. But also, they don't pay much at all. Yeah. They have the creator mm-hmm. fund. I've done a couple sponsorships on TikTok, which have been cool. But YouTube, I think, is definitely, in my experience, the best to their creators, mm-hmm. and they also pay the best.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
So, like, I've never had a contact at TikTok or Instagram or Twitter to reach out to me and say, hey, you know, you're creating content on our platform that's making us a lot of money. How can we help you?
Right. Okay.
Like, even, like, I remember trying to get verified on Instagram, and I could not get a hold of a single person. Like, so I'm not verified on TikTok. And, like, that's fine. But YouTube, I have a partner manager there who basically helps me to look back at my analytics, see what did well, to help me get brand deals and opportunities who I don't pay a dime.
Which is interesting because right. you'd think they'd want to help you because you're helping be yes. on the platform.
Yes. Right. Yeah.
And I know YouTube gets a lot of criticism and, like, as a company. And I do think, you know, some of it rightfully so. But I think... treat their creators very well. And the split, I believe, with YouTube is for AdSense, 45%, I think, goes to the creator and 55% for YouTube, which sounds...
That's,
actually... Yeah, that's pretty
almost
good.
Almost half.
Yeah. It's I think it's pretty good. I know now there's, like, more hurdles to get into the partner program where you can get ads. Mm. But I think, like, I think YouTube has the best possibility for making good money for, like, the social media platforms. But it's hard. It's so hard to grow on YouTube.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that's the drawback, right? Like, yes. TikTok, you can grow and you got, you know, a bunch of followers, but, like, you're not really making a lot. YouTube takes forever. But when you get there,
yes.
you're getting the money.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. So actually a lot of the subscriber questions were about filming in public and being recognized in public and being with other people when that's happening.
Okay. So filming in public is one of those things that just always feels awkward.
Right.
But I do think... like, you get a little more used to it. And I think when, like, at least for me, I started to feel more comfortable filming in public when I went full-time on YouTube because I was like, this is my job.
Right.
Like,
I
have to do this.
Just right. get out this of my way.
Doing.
I need to do it.
Yeah.
We got to get the shot.
Exactly.
To get the shot.
Yeah. And I wish I could go back and tell smaller influencer Sierra, like, act with that confidence now.
Mm. Right.
Because no one out there knows how many subscribers you have.
Right.
No, none of the people looking at you at Target know if you have 5 subscribers or 50 million.
Right.
So act with the confidence like you have 50 million.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think, yeah, like, it's a little embarrassing. Yeah. But you just gotta
just
do it.
Yeah.
I know. I'm still and trying to do that. Especially with too. Myself eating at restaurants. I'll, like, prop myself up and just, like, eat. And then, like, or, like, sometimes I'll notice someone behind. Like, I can see in the camera. They're just, like,
watching.
They're
the
literally
camera.
Directly watching at the camera. And I'm like, girl, look away.
And I do think it's a balance, right? Of, like,
yeah.
I want to film myself in public, but I want to be respectful of where I'm filming. And if
right.
I have people are in the background, I don't want to just walk in and be like, I have to film myself because
right.
I'm an influencer.
So
like,
right.
And so I never want to do that. And so I do try to be, you know, really respectful. Anytime if I'm ever asked to put my camera away, of course I do.
Right.
I will say that never happens in San Diego. In LA, it must be so much harder to be a vlogger because they have all these requirements.
It's so tough.
I remember I took one step into an Urban Outfitters, wasn't filming, just had my camera in my hand. They're like, you cannot film here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, got it.
Yep,
understood.
Yep.
Yep. So I try to be respectful of that. And then also, like, not filming strangers or if
right.
there's, like, people that are, you know, if people are in passing in the background, like, that's fine. But if someone's ever, like, their face is, like, in the background, I just blur it because, like, they're just trying to do their grocery shopping. Right. They did not ask to be on camera.
Right.
I want to make sure I'm always being respectful of that. And then, oh, second part of the question was, like, being recognized. I love meeting viewers. COVID definitely makes things a little more complicated.
Right.
Because it's, like, did we take a picture? Did we hug? Like, before COVID, it was just like, oh, my God, hi. Thanks so much for watching.
Right.
And now I feel like on both ends, like, it's kind of been reeled back a little bit. The one thing I will say that I don't think I've talked about before, I would bet money that 95% of creators would be able to know if someone has recognized them without them saying anything.
Yes.
There's a look. There's a vibe. Like, they're just kind of, they're not staring, but it's like a lingering and then looking away. Like, I get it, because I've definitely done that when I saw, like, influencers I recognize out in public, but you don't want to say hi. So, like, they know.
It's the eyes.
Yeah. I know, and I can usually tell. And so, at that point, like, I'm totally cool with people coming up, because I probably already clocked it.
Right.
You're like, just come over already at this point.
Yeah. Do you have people, sorry.
No, go.
Do you have people that try to, like, take pictures of you and not pictures with you?
I have only had that happen once.
That's weird.
And that made me really uncomfortable. And that's, again, with the thing where, like, I don't necessarily want to be bigger.
Right.
Because right now I think people feel comfortable just coming up to me. And I like that. And no one really, like, people don't, like, freak out or, like, scream. Or especially because I think my audience is a little older. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not having, like, kids come up to me.
Right.
It's, like, mostly women who are in, like, their 20s and 30s and sometimes late teens. And so they're not, like, oh, my God, like, freaking out. They're just like, hey, I just wanted to tell you, like, I love your content. And then I'm like, oh, my God, thank you so much. We get to talk. And so it's, like, a very kind of chill interaction.
Yeah. And if you were bigger, like, it'd be like paparazzi pictures, kind of.
Yeah.
Like, that's what that's like when you're trying to take pictures of someone, but not with their knowledge. Like, that's
weird.
Weird.
So, someone took a picture of me, like, at the self-checkout at Target and then, like, DM'd it to me and was like, I just saw you at Target. And I'm like, this is weird.
Please don't.
Like, I'm in my pajamas. I did not, like, this is weird. Right. I probably have, like, my sweatpants, like, wedgying up my butt crack. Like, I don't want this picture to exist.
Right.
And then to send it to me.
Right. And so being like, hey, I think I saw you in Target. Like, why didn't you just say that?
Yeah.
That's so creepy. Just like opening a picture of you. Of, like, me. Imagine you're like, Target. You look behind yourself, because you're looking up, you're like.
Yeah. So that is weird. Uncomfortable. But I will say, only happened to me once.
Mm.
Only once.
That's good.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Just be like, hey.
Yeah.
Let's take a picture. I would rather. Because then I can get ready. I can. We can do a thing.
Yeah. I can turn the wedgied sweatpants around.
Exactly.
Oh, my goodness.
So we had another subscriber question, which was really good. And I genuinely want to know, like, how this goes. So they said, how do you deal with hate and malicious criticism? The main reason I haven't started a YouTube channel is because I'm afraid of getting hurt by comments. Sad face.
That, like, hurts my heart, because my first instinct is to say, no, just do it. Like, it doesn't matter about the hate, right? Like, I think that's very easy to say from the outside of, like, ignore the haters. Like, they don't matter. But the truth is, like, though, especially for, like, people who are sensitive to that kind of stuff, it hurts sometimes. Mm-hmm. Especially the things that are, like, really pointed and that sometimes are things that you are personally insecure about, or things that are maybe a little too true. You know, like, I'm aware that I'm, like, a very, you know, loud, talkative person. And so sometimes when people say things like, oh, my God, like, she's the most annoying person I've ever met. You know, she, like, is just so loud and she talks nonstop. I'm like, oh, maybe I should talk a little less. Like, maybe I am a little bit much, you know, because that's already an insecurity of mine.
Right.
You know? Whereas when people just say, like, you're dumb and fat, I'm like, great. Like,
you're like, okay.
Does not bother me at all, because that's, like, it's not really even personal. It's not about me.
Right.
And so, but one thing I will say about being a content creator is, I think a lot of the times when influencers talk about how hard this job is, it comes across as really tone deaf.
Right.
And I'm aware of that. Like, I'm aware that this is a huge blessing. I am so lucky. I have one of the coolest jobs I could ever imagine. And that's a huge privilege. And so I totally understand from the viewer perspective to see someone essentially living this dream that you would love to live and while you're working, you know, a traditional job, and they're saying, oh, my life is just so hard. Being an influencer is so hard. It's so frustrating because you're like, I would love to have that job.
Right.
And you're sitting there complaining about it. So, like, I am very aware of that. And that's why I don't want to complain too much about it. But I do think being an influencer has unique hardships. Things that at a normal job, you would not have to deal with. Like, you know how people always say, like, oh, you know, no one's looking at you. People are too worried, thinking about themselves. No one's actually thinking these things about you. That's actually not true as an influencer. Like, people are looking at me and overanalyzing me, and there are people who want to see me fail.
And they're telling you.
And they're telling me,
that's
yes.
right. Because you can think whatever you want about other people, and you don't often, like, really say that.
Yes.
But people go out of their way to tell
to take
an influencer
the time. And it's the taking
that they
the time
don't like them or whatever it is.
And that is a uniquely hard thing that I think a lot of the times when influencers talk about how hard it is, they're thinking, oh my God, how nice would it be to have a quote-unquote normal job where there aren't thousands or hundreds of thousands or millions of people analyzing and criticizing every little thing about me.
Yeah.
Right.
I think you have to be pretty secure with yourself to be able to withstand, you know, the not even just the hate, but specifically the criticism and the overanalyzing. I think that can feel really personal sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And so while I want to say to this person, like, don't, like, screw the haters, just make your content. Like, I think it's also okay to, like, be human and, like, be hurt by those things. And, like, that's just the way it is, because in real life, 1,000 people a day are not walking up to you and going, oh, my God, you're the ugliest person I've ever seen, and I hate your style. No one's doing, but then when you're an influencer, if you're reading that, like, if someone just walked up to you on the street and said that, that would ruin your day.
Right. You'd be like, hello?
And you'd think about that for so long, and I think we expect on the internet to just brush it off.
Right, because you're like, it's just a comment.
It's
who
just
cares?
A comment. Who cares? But I think it's okay to, like, be a little hurt by it. I wish I wasn't, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I watch people like Aspen Ovard, who is just truly, like, could not care about what, at least it seems, you know, is, like, very, like, I think it's funny when people, like, hate comment. I wish I could be like that. And with some topics, I am.
Yeah.
But it is hard sometimes.
Yeah.
You know? Especially when it's, like, preying on your insecurities.
Right.
Right.
And then on the flip side of that, like, not to derail, but, like, It's also, like, how do you handle the other side, the adoration, like, people being obsessed with you, and then all that going to your head? Because, yeah, it's great that people are like, I'm obsessed with you, I love you, like, this and everything you do is perfect, you're perfect. But, like, if you're not a grounded person or, like, a centered person, I can't imagine. I mean, celebrities, like...
Right.
Actors and...
Get off your ass and effing work.
Yep,
it
yep.
seems like nobody wants to work these days. That's like my worst
it's my favorite
fear.
Song.
It's
like,
true.
Of like, what could I... If I didn't have Steven and my friends and you guys who like keep me grounded, could I become that if I like lived in this bubble long enough?
Right.
Could it go to my head where I really think that way and talk that way? Like... That's a little scary.
That is scary. Like, you're delusional.
That's delusional.
Yes.
Like, what world you live in, not mine.
Yeah.
Yeah. No,
and
absolutely.
Not the majority of people's, like.
Yeah.
Bro, it's the, yeah, true.
Yeah, they were like.
They were.
That's so true.
Yeah. And that, and I know it's like her just like agreeing, but it felt so like, clearly
but
agreeing
also,
with.
She thinks that way too. So if you're surrounded by people who think that way and are feeding into that, like, why wouldn't she think that that was
everyone
reality?
On set who has been there since
Dude.
4 a.m.
the
they're like.
TikToks of people being like the PA who like just spent 30 hours peeling labels off water bottles.
Yes.
Like,
to get paid $9.25 an hour.
Nobody wants to work. And they're like, oh.
They're like, oh,
and
oh,
so,
God.
Right. That is the other side of that, of like, okay, I am so happy that I have this loving, welcoming audience, but how do I not let it go to my head?
Yeah.
And I think it's surrounding yourself with people who keep you grounded. I think, honestly, living in San Diego helps me a lot. I think when I go to LA, I become a little bit more influencery, which is fine.
With a little sasson.
Yeah.
If she's like, I'm in LA.
Yeah, I'm an LA girly now.
Right.
But if I stayed there and was only around other influencers and no one who had a normal 9-to-5 and no one who didn't have a platform, who would I become?
Yeah.
I don't know if I want to know the answer to that, because I really like who I am. Like, no. I like...
We like who you are. Yeah.
You. Imagine staying a weekend at the Hype House. You leave
it. No way. And you are, like, completely... Like,
I
you
walk
are,
out with the little tiny sunglasses.
Delusion. Yeah. Delusion. Steven's like, hello?
Who are you?
Hello.
Steven comes to pick her up. Yeah. She has, like, the nails. Because here's... Yeah. It's, oh, yeah, it's very much like that. You know when you put on nails and you just all of a sudden just give yourself a little bit more... Also? You just want to do more. Yes. Yeah. It's like that.
It's like that. It's like that. But in the worst way.
Yeah.
Right.
And so I think that there's those two sides, right? Of like not wanting the positivity to go to your head too much, not letting the negativity bring you down. And then I think there's also the middle ground of valid criticism.
Yes.
And I don't want to be a person who puts all criticism into the mindless hate comment category.
Right.
Because I think that sometimes then can lead to people becoming... That, like...
You're just hating on me. Like, you're just a hater.
Yeah,
when they're just trying to, like, either educate you or make you aware of something.
And I think I used to be a lot more defensive. Mm. And I think in the past 3 years or so, I've really learned that, like, criticism and, like, especially criticism that's, like, very kind and respectful is not something that I need to brush off. It's something that I need to take in, you know, and say, okay, if people are saying that the way I said this or the way that I did this offended them, maybe I should look into that and change that. And there have been a lot of things that I've changed the way I talk about things. I've changed the way that I refer to things. I've changed the verbiage I use, the way that I'm showing things, because I've gotten that positive feedback. And I want my audience, I want you guys to know, I want that. I welcome that. Like, make me better.
Right.
And will I be able to listen to every piece of feedback and change everything everyone asks me? Absolutely not.
Right.
But I want to hear it. And I want to know. And I want my audience to feel like they can tell me in a kind way. You know? Right. And I want to hear it.
Yeah.
Right.
That's so good.
It's also good. But I have one more question, because we've just gone over so much. But... And coming from, like, a new creator just starting out, like, what is your advice? What is the takeaway, the little nugget that I need?
Okay. Oof. I think that's okay.
That was so good.
That's so good. Okay. First, I would say number one is creating content that you like on a sustainable schedule. Mm. I think I don't have any actual data on this, but I would guess, and from my experience, the vast majority of people who start social media or start a YouTube channel don't make it past the first 6 months. And a lot of the times, they post a ton in, like, the first couple weeks or the first month because they're excited about it. They're like, I love the content I'm making. I want to make it. I see this future for myself. And they make, you know, 10 videos in a week, and they post them all. And then they're burnt out. And they're like, okay, I can't do this anymore.
Right.
So I think as excited as you are, like, yes, take advantage of that energy and that excitement. And if you want to batch film, sure, but hold on to it. You know, post... Yeah. Once a week, twice a week. If you're on TikTok, post once a day at least. Find a way to make it sustainable, because the reality is most people tap out before they even have the opportunity to make it.
Oh, my God. I feel that. I literally feel that.
Yeah.
I was looking at my YouTube channel today, like literally this morning, and I was going through. I was looking at all the videos I'd posted. And I've posted a lot of videos throughout the past 6 years, six or 7 years. And there was so many videos at the beginning, and I was like, I can't. And then there's years in between of nothing.
Yeah. And I think it's so much better to start off small at the beginning. Don't bite off more than you can chew, so that it can be sustainable. Because it can take people... I mean, it took me 2 years to have my first viral video. Someone like Mr. Beast, who's like one of the biggest creators, has talked about how he was like a creator for like 10 years. Before things took off, and now he's like one of the biggest content creators on YouTube. Like, I think, imagine all of the people who could have been the next Liza Koshy, the next Mr. Beast, the next whoever, but tapped out before they hit their stride.
Oof. Yeah.
So I think
it would be a shame.
Stick with it. It's just such a shame, right?
Yeah.
And I think my second piece of advice is don't overthink it. Start today. Start yesterday. Start tomorrow. Like, just... I think it's so easy to get in your head about it and be like, I want to make it perfect. I want to do this and that.
Yep.
Make 100 bad videos. Mm-hmm. Learn how to film as you go. You don't have to know everything from the start. Learn how to edit. If you have an iPhone, you have an excellent camera. Mm-hmm. You can edit on your phone. iMovie is free. Like, start now. And you can learn as you go. And the best thing that you can hope for is that you look back on those earlier videos and you cringe. Because
right.
That means but back then, that was the best you could do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But now you've gotten so much better. So I think start today. Be sustainable with your schedule.
Am I going to cry?
I know. This is so good.
And I guess third, because I love doing things in threes, don't be afraid to advocate for yourself. Like, you have value. You have a unique perspective. You, even if your audience is small, like, there's something special about you. And don't be afraid to advocate for yourself and say, I know I'm worth more than this. And I think that's the most important things. I'm sure there's a million other things that we could dive into. And also, I feel like I've talked the vast majority of this podcast. And again, insecurity of mine that I talk too much. So right. I'm like, I already know I'm anticipating the comments being like, Sierra just doesn't stop. Which I agree. I don't.
Right.
But that being said, I would love to do kind of a part two of this. Mm-hmm. Maybe in a couple weeks where you guys talk about more about your experiences learning the ropes of being an influencer.
I would love that. And it would be so fun to revisit that and be like, oh my God, at that point I only had like this. And now I feel I'm at this point and I'm doing all these things.
And I can ask you guys questions.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Oh my God. What's your content schedule? How's it going? Have you figured out the equipment stuff? Have you figured out the editing, the transition?
Yes.
That'd be great.
That would be so fun.
Okay. Well, I guess that is going to be it for this podcast. I had such a blast.
Me too. And I learned so much. And I hope that you guys learned a lot too. And like it was inspiring for you. Start today.
Yep, start today.
I feel really inspired too.
Oh, yeah. Good. I'm so glad. I love talking about this stuff. Like, and that's why I'm so excited that like in-person events are coming back. Like Ryan and I are going to, and Jess are going to this convention called Clamor. And then I'm going to VidCon. And like, I want those things again.
Yeah.
Because I love just sitting around and like talking about this.
Yeah.
I'm excited about it. But I guess I can stop rambling now. give us a review on Apple Podcasts, 5 stars. They do stars, right?
I think so.
Yeah. Whatever you can give us.
Whatever you do,
give it to us.
Yeah.
And you can subscribe on YouTube to watch the video version. And follow Ryan and Paloma because we want to see them be superstars.
Yes.
Please.
Superstar. Bye.
Bye.